first show of 2024. First show of 2024. I'm going to put out a disclaimer at the beginning of this show. I apologize if you hear some incessant purring or meows. I have a cat on my lap who seemingly has decided that the only place for her to be resting in this house is on my lap. So you may hear a couple rogue meows or purring. So apologies in advance.
I'm going to need you to silence that right now.
Yeah, I'm really trying to. She's being pretty insistent. She's got this thing where whenever anybody sits at the desk with a computer, it just seems to be, for whatever reason, her favorite spot to be at any given time when somebody's here. So so here we are. But I can't really tell her no, you know? What am I supposed to tell her? Stop being a sweet cat?
You're an enabler, man.
I think I might be.
You are the problem.
I might be the problem. You know what? And actually, Natalie's cat, Xena, has Natalie sort of created a problem with Xena because she started feeding her so much like people food. Now, whenever you end up eating, she's like right under your foot. And just she will not leave people alone. It's bad.
That's one of my pet peeves. I think we've talked about pet peeves before on the show. And it's hard really to identify pet peeves for me in the moment. But people feeding their dogs straight from the table, that just irritates me so much.
She doesn't necessarily do it from the table, but Natalie will sometimes like go just like have a snack on the couch or whatever, like if she's eating like popcorn or something. And then from time to time, she'll just, you know, let Xena taste it just to see what it, you know, what she'll do and if she'll like it. So, but now it's just become a thing where, you know, she wants food.
She wants.
And it's so annoying. what wasn't annoying was the holiday, you know, the holidays and the start of the new year. Sam, how was Christmas? How was the new year? How was all of that?
Man, the holidays have been awesome. New Year's just took it pretty quiet. Stayed in just with Jenna, and we played an escape room in a box. But the device that we were using didn't work. So every time we like try to type in a correct code, it would give us tell us that it's wrong. And then we ended up looking up online, like, what the right code was. And it was like, oh, my, we have it. Like, why isn't this working? And it just never worked. So we were just felt defeated.
Well, I'm sorry. did you guys actually end up staying awake until midnight on New Year's?
Yes, sir. Yeah, we've done that. So we don't have a cable, obviously. So we got like a really janky recording, like stream that someone put up of the ball dropping, and we stayed up all the way till midnight.
Well, you beat myself, Natalie, and Bree. We were all in bed by 10 o'clock.
kind of
treated it like any other day. Bree and I went to go see a movie, and then I think we ended up all watching a movie after that, and then we went to bed.
my uncle, he asked, I just saw him yesterday, and he was like, yeah, I didn't even make it till New York. I didn't even make it till the East Coast New Year's. He went to sleep at 7 o'clock.
Does he normally do that?
I don't think so.
Oh man. He's like, you know what? I'm going to do the opposite of what everybody does today.
But my mom's side is notorious for going to sleep early. My mom for a stretch was going to sleep like at 6 o'clock.
Bree's mom goes to bed at around 7 and gets up at like 3 or 4.
Yeah, it's a different way of life. You just know, like, oh man, I really want to call my mom, but then it's getting to that point where you're like, yeah, she's just not awake
right
now, and it's 7 o'clock.
Right. I actually think my parents have started going to bed later now that Natalie and I are both out of the house, which is a weird thing that I did not expect. I'm sure I'm going to get a text message immediately. As soon as my dad hears this episode, on whether or not that's true or not. But I feel like when I call them at around 9:30 or 10, usually they're both awake, like heading to bed, but both still awake, which is an interesting thing that I didn't expect to come from Natalie and I being out of the house. I guess the excuse would be now they can kind of watch whatever they want to watch. And so I guess they have more, maybe there's more incentive to stay awake because now they have time to like watch whatever show they want to watch. So I guess maybe there's that, but who knows? Well, when we were, the plan usually is always to try to film around Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, somewhere in that block. But I was extremely busy this week, Sam. I don't know if you were. This week and next week for me are going to be absolutely crazy. My boss is gone, so a lot of the classes that we teach at the gym have fallen to me. So I've been really, really busy. So this episode is being filmed Saturday afternoon. So it's really tough to talk about the games that are going to be coming out. I mean that are going to be playing tomorrow. You know, because by the time this episode comes out, you know, everybody's hearing it for the first time tomorrow. you know, it, the games are going to be being played. With that being said, the one thing that I would like to do, at least for this upcoming weekend, is not necessarily talk about the games per se, but maybe some of the storylines to watch out for and how that will carry over into maybe the postseason or the offseason. Because, you know, we can dissect the games all we want, but as soon as the games are being played tomorrow, it really isn't going to make any difference, you know, what we thought or not. However, the storylines really could carry into next week and the week after. So I ended up going online and I found a – I was actually surprised. I thought I was going to find more – articles that were detailing some of the biggest storylines heading into week 18. But I was really only able to find one good one, and that was from the New York Daily News. And I've got a couple different places that we can start with. The first one that I would like to start with, and I'm not going to do these in any particular order, like in terms of like what I think is the most important or not. The first one I want to start with actually is in your division, Sam. I'm going to start with the Rams. So this is from, like I said, New York Daily. Puka Nacua, he is 4 catches away from the rookie receptions record and 29 yards away from the rookie receiving yards record. I'm assuming he's going to break that on Sunday. So my question really is, with how well Puka Nacua has played and how well C.J. Stroud has played, if you had a vote for Offensive Rookie of the Year, who would you go to? And this is going to be assuming that Puka Nacua actually breaks both of those records.
I'd probably give it to Puka. I think has he missed a game? He might have missed one or two, but I think that stretch where CJ missed 2 or 3 games with that concussion. He also, CJ started off a little bit rough in the beginning of the year, which is natural, and Puka got off to that crazy hot start when Cooper Kupp was out. I think just with all of those, like, perfect storm and the way that the Rams have looked as of late, I think Puka has come on late enough and hot enough that he should probably just eke out what CJ Stroud did this year.
So I obviously they're 2 different positions. So comparing stats is, you can't really compare them to one another. You kind of just have to take CJ Stroud's stats and kind of compare them in the ether that you would, you know, for other quarterbacks, and the same for Puka. So if you look at Puka Nacua's stats right now, he has 101 receptions, 1,445 yards. He's averaging 14 yards per catch. And then he is, his longest has been 80 and he has 5 touchdowns. And then you have CJ Stroud, who right now is at a 63% completion percentage, 3,800 yards, 21 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, and has an average quarterback rating of 99.0. So reading both of those stats, those are outstanding seasons, irregardless of whether or not they're rookies or not. The fact that they are rookies is just – it's ridiculous. I think the tipping point for me, what's going to be interesting, I think, is if he doesn't break either one of those records. Like, what if he gets 3 catches for, like, 20 yards? Like – that, like, who are they playing? Are they playing,
the Niners?
Yeah, okay, so they're playing the Niners. The Niners just go, you know what? He's not breaking this record. We're going to triple team him all game. We've already got the 1 seed. Who cares? And he only gets, like, 3 catches for 25 yards. So if he ends up not breaking either one of those records, which I think is extremely unlikely, I still think you'd have to give it to him based on just how close he was. I mean – I know CJ Stroud has been playing absolutely amazing. He only needs what did we say is yards worth? 3,000. So CJ Stroud probably is going to break the 4,000 yard mark, which is outstanding for a rookie quarterback. But
yeah,
even for me, if Puka Nacua did not break the record, I still think I would give it to him just because, you know, he's on a team with Cooper Kupp, and Cooper Kupp for a long time had been regarded as like a top five wide receiver in the NFL. And he just completely took that away from Cooper Kupp. Not saying that Cooper Kupp like lost anything, but Puka just burst onto the scene and just completely stole that spotlight from Cooper Kupp. And I think when you take into account that the likelihood of him breaking these records is extreme, I think you have to give it to him, even if he broke one. But the fact that he's probably going to break two, that's ridiculous. I suppose the one that, you know, he may not break could be the catches, but I could easily see him breaking the yards one. Like, I could see him easily catching, you know, three catches for 98 yards and a touchdown. Like, that could happen. But I also think that, the Rams really need to win this game. So they're going to be feeding their best players. He's going to be their best offensive player. I don't think you can give it to CJ Stroud, especially if he ends up breaking this record. I don't think it's close.
Yeah, I mean, when you read those stats, even now, if both players were to sit today, I think Puka's got the edge. Puka is fourth in receiving yards this season as a rookie. CJ Stroud is ninth for all QBs, which is, I mean, it's incredible for both of them. But the production that Puka Nacua is getting in a Sean McVay offense with Matthew Stafford, we know that they produced that incredible year that Cooper Kupp had a few years ago. Like, this offense is built for wide receiver production. And I think Puka Nacua is just he's a beneficiary of that perfect storm of he should win this award. Even if, and I think anticipating that, I hope CJ gets over 4,000 yards as a rookie. I hope the Texans are able to win tonight and beat the Colts and make the playoffs with a rookie head coach and rookie QB and just a lot of young guys in that organization. I think that if the Texans make the playoffs, I think that actually might be a huge feather in the cap for CJ Stroud and his campaign to win this award. But I think Puka Nacua is the most deserving.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Rams also have a bit of a story there as well, just from the standpoint of, you know, they, first of all, they started off horribly. They had a lot of people injured at the beginning of the season, but what were they to start the season, like 1-3, 1-4?
I mean, I actually don't think they started off that terribly. If you remember, we thought the expectation for this team was they're going to be one of the worst teams in the NFC. I mean, this roster is so old. They have so many undrafted free agents. Like, you can't name anyone on their defense outside of Aaron Donald. And then they go out and beat Seattle, like crush Seattle in that first game. And that was like, whoa. And then they played really well against San Francisco. They had Cincinnati early. They had the Eagles early. Like, they had a tough stretch there in the beginning that their record may have said that they weren't very good. But we were saying week in and week out, oh, we kind of believe in this Rams team. Like, they're better than what their record says.
Right. I think it was them in Cincinnati who sort of got off to the really slow starts. But yeah, I mean, give the Rams credit. They were able to dig themselves out of that hole, and Puka Nacua was an absolutely huge part of that. I don't think that if he breaks both of those records, which I'm assuming he will, I really don't see how you can give it to anybody else. I understand that the Texans were an absolutely like nothing franchise. Basically heading into this season and then it was CJ Stroud who just completely went in there and changed everything. I understand all of that, but you know, to break two NFL receiving records in one season, I think you have to give it to him just based off that. There was another receiving record that looked like it might fall that it feels unlikely now, and that's Tyreek Hill's record, or I should say Calvin Johnson's record that Tyreek Hill was chasing. So this is from, again, that same website. Tyreek Hill's season-long goal of surpassing 2,000 receiving yards appears far-fetched now, but Miami's superstar receiver could still make NFL history with a massive game. So Hill, who enters with 1,717 receiving yards, needs 248 yards to pass Calvin Johnson's single-season record of 1,964, which the former Lions star achieved when the NFL schedule was still 16 games. Now, here's the interesting part. I read that stat and you go, 249 yards. That seems ridiculous. Well, this Hill has only eclipsed 248 receiving yards in one game throughout his career. So it's one of those things where, you know, and now I'm not reading from the thing anymore, but it's one of those things where I guess if you were to pick somebody to have a 248 yard game and you were to pick an offense that seemed reasonable for that to happen in, you'd pick Tyreek Hill and you'd pick Miami. The only problem is that they're going to be going up against Buffalo, who has a real vested interest in winning that game. So I imagine priority number one is going to be keep Tyreek Hill as silent as possible. I really don't think that has a chance of falling this weekend.
Yeah, and it's really unfortunate because he was, I think, on pace to beat it with a couple games to spare. Mm-hmm. He's averaging right now 114 yards per game, which is incredible. But I think he was upwards of like 130 before this really tough stretch. He had some injury that pushed him out. I think it was his ankle or something like that, his foot. Yeah, so he missed a couple games. So it would honestly be incredible if you were to break it, because you would break it within that 16 game span, which is kind of that snafu of, well, that's what Calvin Johnson did it in.
Right. Let's play this out for a second. Let's say Tyreek Hill he does break the record, right?
Yep.
He has 300 yards. It just goes absolutely nuclear.
Yep.
One of the two questions, and I know this is hypothetical, but, you know, sometimes in sports, that, you know, these are the fun questions. Let's do this first one. If he breaks the record, does that mean that he would automatically get MVP?
Oh, no.
No, you don't think so?
No, I think Lamar's locked it up.
Lamar's locked it up. Okay. So for you then, let's say Tyreek Hill broke the record and he did it in 17 games. How would you, in your mind, like rank, I guess, the Calvin Johnson, Tyreek Hill thing? Because that extra game really does, and it really does add a layer to this whole thing that I think, unfortunately, for a lot of players going forward, if anybody ever has a chance at actually breaking that record, I think there's going to be a large crowd of people who are going to say, well, you have to do it in 16 games.
Yep. Or
everybody's still going to look at Calvin Johnson as the yards receiver, so like yards leader, so like,
yeah,
what?
The king.
Yeah
I think Tyreek Hill knew that, because I think there were definitely reports before the season started, and especially early on when they were going crazy, that he wanted to break it in 16 games. So there was no conversation. I think if he were to go out, which again, this is all hypothetical, it's not going to happen this year because he won't play a 17th game. He's only going to be able to play 16. But if Tyreek Hill next year goes out and beats it in that 17th game, then I think you would just have to go by like yards per game. And it's like, well, Calvin Johnson's season was more impressive.
Well, so you would still be at the Calvin Johnson crowd is like, he's still the king.
I think you would kind of have to. Right. Like, I think that, like, obviously what Tyreek Hill is doing this year and potentially doing in the future is spectacular and impressive. I think he definitely should be in MVP conversations with what he is doing this season. And the Dolphins look completely different when Tyreek Hill is on than when he's either a non-factor or out of the game completely. You got to give respect to what Calvin Johnson did in a different NFL.
Right, right. Okay, so see, this leads to another interesting kind of question on like how we break up these record books, right? Because I needed to pull this up to fact check this. And I'll read this from Wikipedia, but in 1978, the league changed the schedule to include 16 regular season games and 4 exhibition games. Right. From 1978 through 1989, the 16 games were played over 16 weeks.
Buys?
Huh?
They had no buys?
According to this, yeah.
Okay.
So that's And then you go back a little bit. So before that, the NFL was playing 14 games. So when you go back to these record books and these, you know, these old records that have stood since, you know, the 50s, the 60s and 70s, it's one of those things where, like, do you think that in rule books that, well, let's just use the NFL, not in rule books, in record books, there should be some sort of, like, I don't know, delineation between, hey, these are records that took place prior to 1978. These are the records that took place after 1978. And then for us, like, oh, these are the records that took place once they added a 17th game. Or because, you know, there are, I'm sure that there are records that have, that are still there since, like, you know, the early 1970s that haven't been broken, that people playing now, because they have three extra games, I mean, they have a huge advantage there.
Well, do you think, like, are we going to see a running back get 2,000 yards, rushing yards in a season?
I have no idea. I mean, you'd think, honestly, the running back stat now to me feels like the, like, all-purpose yards, like the receiving and rushing. I feel like that's going to be the number that people are going to look at for productive running backs.
In. Like, CMC is, I mean, by far having the best year for a running back, I think. Right. Because most guys got injured this year, but he's plus 300 on second place, and he's having a great year, having an MVP like year, but he's nowhere close. He's 600 yards off.
Yeah.
What, like, Adrian Peterson did and what other guys did. So I think it's just like a give and take. I think there is a delineation, like a natural thing that all fans kind of have in their head. I think the best way to, like, I guess, compare that is when you take baseball records and you have the steroids era compared to pre and post. It's like, yes, what those guys were doing is absolutely incredible. The numbers they were putting up were incredible. But then it's like, you also can compare what Hank Aaron did and what Babe Ruth did. And in different circumstances, it's like, well, though, and Willie Mays, and like those guys' seasons statistically weren't up to what Mark McGwire, Barry Bonds, Sammy Sosa, all those guys did. But, you know, within that context of the time, it's like, yes, that was spectacular. Like, both seasons are spectacular. And I think it's the same with football now. Like, we can look back at Joe Montana, Terry Bradshaw, especially Jerry Rice, what he was doing statistically. And it's like, those guys are playing in an era where running the football and throwing down the field wasn't as prevalent, and running the football was so much more prevalent. Mm-hmm. So of course that's why, like, there's always context, I think, that people put into it.
Right. Yes. And I agree with you. I feel like we as fans definitely do it, but I mean, like, I wonder if there would ever be a place where, like, it feels like it becomes, like, a really official thing for these major sports leagues to actually make some sort of official, you know, delineation in their actual record books. Like, hey, we are very well aware that, you know, there were 14 games being played at this time in the NFL. Then there were 16, and then there were 17. We have records for each time period. I know that we as fans do that, but I wonder if we'd ever get to a point where, like, it becomes official in any of these major sports leagues record books. I don't know if they would ever do that, but I don't know. At the same time, we already all do it as fans. I think literally everybody just kind of puts that in the back of their mind. Like, there's not a single person out there, I think, that if Tyreek Hill would break Calvin Johnson's record, would look at that and go, well, I mean, whether or not you think Tyreek Hill, I mean, it's Tyreek Hill's record or Calvin Johnson's record or not, feels irrelevant. The thing is that 16 games is always going to be a part of the conversation, whether or not you agree with it or not, that Tyreek Hill is the, you know, receiving yards record. You just can't take it out of it. So if you can't take it out of it, then I feel like you just have to make it a part of the conversation officially. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think that's the Barry Bonds has the single season home run record, right? But then there's still people out there that believe that Babe Ruth is the home run king because of him seemingly doing it clean and all this different things, right? So I think it'd be kind of the same, but that's not for the MLB or for the NFL to make that determination. They just have to go off of, well, if Tyreek Hill breaks Calvin Johnson's record, then he is the record holder. Because right. if they were to go and say, well, he's the record holder for 17 games, but you have Calvin Johnson who's the record holder for 16 games, then you have, I don't know, Michael Irvin for 12 games or something like that. Like, it's like, okay, you're not, you're almost discrediting yourself in your decisions to extend the season. Like, you're almost going back on it there.
Right. Right. No, I get it. Yeah. So there's definitely, it's a slippery slope, I guess, in that situation. But I don't know. It's just an interesting conversation. It's one that I've heard before. I don't think you and I have ever had that on this show. And one thing too, I'm gonna do a quick sidebar.
Uh-oh.
Just for mainly for you, the since we're talking about records, it got me thinking. So I just started reading a sports book, and obviously it's well documented on this show who my favorite broadcaster is.
Don't even need to say it.
Yeah, I don't even need to say it. So anyway, Greeny ended up writing a book last year, which I don't know if you knew that he did that or I had mentioned to you that he did, but the idea of the book is that they take the numbers 1 through 100 mm-hmm. and they assign each number to a specific person or event or like they basically determine who owns that number in sports. So like okay. so like for number 12, I'm not there yet. Well, actually, let me just do like number 2. They said that Derek Jeter owns number 2 in sports. And then I think DiMaggio was 5. Was DiMaggio 5 or 4?
Wow, that's disrespectful of what De'Aaron Fox is doing this season.
No, I know. I was reading through it last night. Yeah, he was 5. I just wanted to triple check that. Anyway, so literally each chapter is only about like 2 pages, and they basically just have justification for why said player or owns that number. And I just read numbers 1 through 5 last night, and my dude, it is one of the if you love sports and you love sports history, it is the fastest read of any book. I got through like the first 5 chapters in I think 6 minutes. It was just the most fascinating thing ever. And the numbers that they were able to pull on all of these people, men and women, it's just incredible. When I'm done with the book, I'm going to give it to you to read. And I'm telling you, for anybody listening, if you are a fan of sports, I'm only 5 pages into it, and this is like already my favorite book of all time, just because it's so infinitely fascinating.
We getting paid for this sidebar?
No, but it's awesome.
Does it come with pictures?
No.
Oh man, I'm a really slow reader, so I need some pictures to look at, and more importantly, take up some of that space on that page.
I'm a slow reader too. My favorite chapter so far was number 4. They assigned that to Bobby Orr, and the numbers that they had, because obviously Wayne Gretzky is regarded as, you know, the greatest hockey player of all time, but they had some stats on Bobby Orr that you could really push back and say, well, actually, I think Bobby Orr was the greatest hockey player of all time. It's unbelievable. So anyway, just a little sidebar for anybody who's interested in a really good read. It's really, really cool. So speaking of sports history, there is a current coach in the NFL right now who might go down as the greatest NFL coach in the history of the NFL, and that's Bill Belichick. And there's a very real possibility that his last game is this weekend with the New England Patriots. I don't know whether or not I don't think anybody really knows what he's going to do afterward. I was listening to ESPN this morning, and the feeling that I got from – so Mike Reese is ESPN's NFL insider on the New England Patriots. He's been there for years. And he seems sort of wishy-washy on it. He seemed like 50-50. And from everything that I heard this morning, everybody sort of seems like, well, it can go either way. The one thing that was 100% clear was that Bill definitely still wants to coach. And I think the feeling is that he does still want to be there. But I think it's, at least from everything that I'm hearing, it's like 50-50. So I'll just ask you, like, based on the season, based on the history, all that other stuff, like, do you think he's going to end up back in New England? Or if they end up getting a top pick and take a new young quarterback after the disaster that it appears Mac Jones has been and the development of him has been, do you think they'll just get rid of Bill, start over, start completely fresh, or run it back?
You know what? I'll answer that sort of by not answering the question. I think it's up to him. And I think they leave that up to him. I think he's earned that respect. I don't think he would get fired or be traded if it wasn't his decision. And you know what? The Patriots have played better to end this year. Since benching Mac Jones, I mean, they've been in one possession games pretty much the rest of the season against pretty tough opponents. They held the Chiefs to only a 10-point game. They beat the Broncos when the Broncos were still trying to win and make the playoffs. They played well against the Bills last week and probably still should have won. They beat the Steelers. So there's the team is still responding and playing well to Belichick, which I think is more important than anything. And I think you run it back with them again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I'm on the fence about it, truthfully. I don't know. I'm literally dead set in the middle because I can hear an argument for both sides. It's Bill Belichick. It's the six Super Bowls. It's this, that, and the other. Name whatever accolade you want about Bill Belichick. There's any amount of justifications for bringing Bill Belichick back. But I understand that sometimes, you know, when it comes to, you know, not just sports, you know, sometimes just things life in general, like sometimes just it's time for a fresh start. And you can't really necessarily pinpoint why. There's just a feeling in the air that, you know what, we kind of just need to hit a reset button. And it's this season more so than the previous season and then the one before that definitely felt it feels more like if you were going to press a reset button, that now would be a justifiable time to do so, especially if you end up with a really high pick and you pick a young quarterback and you just want to go get maybe a new head coach, a younger head coach who maybe is more offensive minded than Bill and maybe has a better chance of developing him. I don't know. I really can hear both sides of the equation. The interesting thing is going to be if he doesn't end up back in New England, like where would he go? Like what
wherever he wants.
Huh?
Wherever he wants, man.
Well, kind of, right? You'd think. But then at the same time, I don't know. If you're an organization, you're bringing on Bill Belichick, who very clearly has a specific way that he likes to do things. He's going to want a lot of control. He's 71, I believe. Is that something you're willing to do maybe for a season or two?
If you're the Panthers, you have everything to gain and nothing to lose for bringing in Bill Belichick. If you're the Commanders, you have everything to gain and nothing to lose with bringing in Bill Belichick.
Mm-hmm.
There are some desperate franchises. I was going to pose this as a question to you. Do you think there's going to be – which number is going to be higher? New coaches next year or new QBs?
New coaches or new QBs? Probably coaches. Actually, I don't know, because everything that I keep hearing about this draft, there's like four or five quarterbacks that people are saying are really, really, really good. So I guess if you assume that all of them start at some point so hang on. Are you asking who's going to be starting week one or if like they're going to just like, I don't know, start a veteran and then eventually transition to the rookie by like week five or something.
No, how many teams next year are going to be starting a different quarterback on week one than they did this season?
Okay, well, we can rapid fire this real quick. So let's do this. So Arizona, no, right?
Nope.
Okay. The Falcons, yes.
How are you doing? What list are you reading from?
I'm literally on the NFL website right now.
Okay.
They just have all the teams listed right here. It's not in any specific order. It's going in alphabetical order. That's what it is. Okay, so Arizona, no. Just stop me if you feel like there's an incorrect answer here. So Arizona, no. Falcons, yes. Carolina, no.
Ooh.
The Bears,
Oh.
I think, let's just say for the sake of argument, yes.
Whoa, okay.
Even though I wouldn't do it, but let's just say for the sake of argument, yes. So let's say two. Dallas, no. The Lions, no. Packers, no. Rams, no. Vikings, do you think Kirk Cousins is coming back?
He's a free agent. I think they should bring him back.
They should bring him back, but let's just say they don't. So that's three. New Orleans, probably not.
Okay.
Probably not. The Giants.
They just gave Daniel Jones that big contract.
Contract, right? So, I don't know. What do you think?
I think he starts week one.
Okay, so
for sure.
That's a yes. Philly, San Francisco, Seattle. They're all no's. Tampa, no, because Baker played really well. And if he gets them into the playoffs, then absolutely not. And Washington, yes. So that's four from the NFC. The AFC's probably going to be a little bit easier. Baltimore, Buffalo, Cincy, no. Cleveland, I probably not. But I guess it depends on who you're talking about, because Joe Flacco's on the roster right now.
Yep.
So if he ends up taking them really deep in the playoffs and Deshaun's still hurt by the start of next year, then I guess that's technically no. Denver, yes. Houston, no. Indianapolis, they started this year with Anthony Richardson. I'm imagining they'll be the same next year, so no. Jacksonville, no. Kansas City, no. Raiders, probably. So that's six. Chargers, no. Dolphins, no. Patriots, yes. I'm guessing. The Jets?
Yep. No.
They started with Aaron Rodgers, so.
Yep.
Yeah, so no. Steelers, yes. And the Titans, they started with Ryan and they finished with Levis. I'm assuming they're going to keep Levis.
Yep.
So let's say yes. That's nine right there. So do we think there's going to be nine fires in the NFL? I guess you're right. I guess probably quarterbacks then, right?
Well, you got Carolina already made a firing. You have, someone else. Washington. Raiders. Yeah, you're right. Washington is, heck, if Bill Belichick gets fired, then New England.
Right.
Right.
This was 3 days ago. Three head coaches have been fired this season: McDaniels, Frank Wright, and Brandon Staley.
That's right. I forgot about Brandon Staley. So, do we think there's going to be six more or seven more firings? I don't see that really.
Probably not.
That'd be pretty extreme. Find
this. Which NFL season? Let's see. Had the most NFL. Let's see.
Have we ever gotten to 10?
Let's see.
I mean, just for the simple fact that Chicago is backing, who else did you have? Like, Denver's not moving on. The Jets aren't moving on. The Giants, could they fire Daboll?
So I wasn't able to find the statistic that I was looking for, but there's a SB Nation posted an article, and right here they said it was eight head coaches who could be fired on Black Monday. So here we go. Here's the A. So Arthur Smith in Atlanta.
Yep.
Mike Vrabel in Tennessee.
I don't think he's got to be traded. I don't think he's fired.
Yeah, he'll be traded. He'll be, if he got fired, he'd be picked up probably before he even hit the street.
Oh yeah.
Matt Eberflus, but I think they already came out and said they're gonna keep him.
That's the Chicago guy.
Right. Yeah. Sean McDermott.
Buffalo can miss the playoffs.
Yeah, they have some at least a few clarifiers. The clarifier for these two are need to perform in the playoffs. That was Sean McDermott. Sorry.
Bless you. Whoa. Bless me.
And Mike McCarthy.
No.
I agree. I don't think that one's gonna happen. And then
I could see Sean McDermott happening, even if they made the playoffs but lose in like the first round or second round. I think they need to get to the conference championship.
Right. And then this last category is who the hell knows, and it's Bill Belichick and Pete Carroll.
Nah, Pete's fine. I think Pete's safe.
I think Pete's safe as well. The author of this, the last sentence for Pete, he said, I think this is unlikely, but it wouldn't surprise me to see a change.
I could see, who else? I was just thinking about. Jacksonville.
You think
Doug Peterson?
Yeah, you think? I don't know.
If they miss the playoffs?
Yeah, but I think you could probably pass that off as Trevor Lawrence being hurt for like four games. I know he played through a couple injuries, but he's been banged up all year.
I don't think that matters. I mean, that team underperformed.
No, they absolutely did.
Even if they somehow win that division. I mean, that division is awful.
Yes.
I don't know. That's a tough one, man. Like, they came into didn't they make the playoffs last season at like 9-8? And then this year they might do the same thing.
What about Robert Saleh?
No, they already came out and said that they're backing him.
Came out?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the odds are probably, now that we've actually sort of done it and gone through it, it's probably more likely that there are going to be more quarterbacks than coaches.
But like New Orleans or Tampa Bay, why aren't they thinking about a coach? Like that whole, the NFC South whole division should be looking for new coaches.
Yeah, but Tampa Bay, they have an old roster. They're coming off of, you know, Tom Brady being there and sort of changing the whole organization. I think the fact that they're 8-8 is more looked at as a positive than a negative for them.
I don't know, man. They have some bad losses.
They've had some bad losses, but at the same time, I mean, they're 8-8. They very easily could get into the playoffs. As long as they win, they get in. So, and who do they have? They have the Panthers.
Yeah, Panthers are feisty.
What?
So, if the Panthers go out and beat Tampa Bay in Carolina, do they stick around with their coach, Todd Bowles?
Again, I think probably because at least the feeling that I've gotten throughout the year from just like national radio stations and national TV stations is that it's been more of a positive that this has happened. Like Baker Mayfield's played great. The defense has played really well. I know they're in a bad division and they're not an amazing team, but I don't think anybody thought they would even sort of, I think at the beginning of the season, everybody was sort of just riding New Orleans in as like the easy pick to win that division.
I think you were more as a for sure. I don't – that division is so up in the air. Man, I think at one point I said Carolina was going to win that division.
I seem to remember that.
That sounds vaguely familiar. I think I picked Atlanta too.
It's crazy too. All three of those teams are in position to win the division because if the Buccaneers lose, then whoever wins between the Saints and the Falcons will get in.
Yep.
Which is just crazy.
Where's that game? Is it in
– which one?
That – oh, it's in New Orleans.
It is in New Orleans, yeah. So New Orleans is counting on Carolina. They are rooting for them hard.
I think Carolina beats them.
It'll be interesting.
How crazy would that be?
Who have the Panthers beaten this season? Did they beat anybody in their – okay, they beat the Falcons, right, the 9-7 game.
The baseball game.
Yes. And they beat the Texans. That's right. That odd.
15-13. That could be baseball, too.
That's some weird scores. Oh, man. All right. Yeah. Well, to round it all off, I think back to the original question, I definitely think that it's probably going to be more quarterbacks now that we've gone through it. The other one that I really wanted to get to is going to be, and this will sort of just transition us into, I guess, really talking about what probably is the biggest game of the weekend. And we can just chit-chat about it for at least a little bit. That's going to be the final game of the regular season, Bills-Dolphins, which, by the way, as we're recording right now, the Steelers are playing the Ravens. Bills at Miami. I want to read from that the New York Daily News article. I want to read this sentence because I thought that this was really, really funny, or these two sentences. The idea that Sunday night's marquee matchup would be a winner-take-all battle for the AFC East seemed laughable this time last month. The high-powered Dolphins were 9-3, fresh off their third win in a row, and had a reasonably manageable schedule ahead of them. The Bills, meanwhile, dropped to 6-6 with their third loss in four games. And then they go on to say that In the 4 weeks since, the Dolphins lost a stunner to the lowly Titans, beat the Jets and Cowboys, and got embarrassed in a 56-19 showdown. I mean, beat down by the Ravens last Sunday. Conversely, the Bills haven't lost since, reeling off four straight victories, including Kansas City and Dallas, to control their own destiny. That sentence summed it up. A month ago, this just didn't seem like this was even a conversation to be had. But there's not a team in the AFC right now outside of the Ravens who are playing better than the Bills. And if I'm Miami, I'm really worried about this game.
Yeah, especially injuries. I mean, their defensive line is in flux. They've had Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle are going to be limited in this game. Ramsey's had some injury stuff. I mean, that Miami is like limping into the playoffs, and Buffalo's just steaming ahead. Of course, we'd be remiss in mentioning that Buffalo didn't look very good against New England, but again, that's just New England beat them earlier in this season, and it might just be like Bill Belichick has a really good scheme against Josh Allen. Who knows?
I feel like they never play good against the Patriots. Like, I feel like every time they match up, it's always just a really ugly game.
Yeah, you remember a couple years ago when both teams made the playoffs and it was that storm game, like in the snow, and New England ended up winning that game. Buffalo really needs, as we're talking, Steelers are up 7-0. They really need Baltimore to win that game.
Mm-hmm.
Because if the Steelers and Jacksonville both win and Buffalo loses, I think that's the scenario where Buffalo is out of the playoffs.
Yeah, so I'm really glad you brought that up, because there's another article here from Dolphins Wire. It's a USA Today affiliate, and they had five storylines going into this game, and they're all really interesting. And one of the ones is that Buffalo still could miss the playoffs.
Yep, and honestly, they probably deserve to.
They deserve to?
Yeah.
That doesn't seem right.
You don't think so?
No, not at all. Why do they deserve to miss?
Because Buffalo's played – are we forgetting what they looked like early in the season?
Yeah, but they've gotten hot at the right time. They're peaking at the right time. So the beginning of the season, yes, they looked terrible. But, I mean, we were lauding them over the past couple weeks. They barely lost to Philly. Then they beat the Chiefs. They beat Dallas. They go off the road and beat the Chargers. They beat the Patriots. They've played really, really well. So, truthfully, the beginning of the season, I don't think justifies saying that they deserve to miss it, because the goal of the NFL season is to make it through this marathon and to peak at the right time. And they were 6-6 amongst playing really well. And now, amongst playing really poorly, and they have peaked at the right time and put themselves in a really good situation. I don't think it's fair to say that they deserve to miss.
In saying that, if we're using the analogy of this is a marathon, has a team tripped more than Buffalo this season?
Jacksonville, maybe.
I mean, losing to the Jets with no Aaron Rodgers, losing to the Jags in London when Buffalo looked like they didn't even want to be there, losing to the Patriots, a really bad Mac Jones Patriots team, losing to the Broncos in that debacle of a game when they can't even get lined up for that game-winning field goal. Losing to the Eagles when there's no reason they should have lost to the Eagles. That game against the Giants that they ended up winning, when the Giants had two chances on the one-yard line to get a touchdown and win that game, but they messed up both times, one before the half and one before the end of the game. I mean, this team is hanging on by the skin of their teeth.
I mean, yes, you can point to all of that, but every good team has stumbled throughout this
year. Not this much.
I mean, the Niners, you guys lost to the Vikings, you lost to the Bengals, you lost to the Browns when they were still not great.
It was PJ Walker, Browns.
Yeah, so like, and right now everybody thinks that the 49ers are the best team in the league. Well, actually, maybe the Ravens decided to take that from them. No. But again, like, yes, they had some early season stumbles, but they're playing
better. No, it wasn't early season. That was the entire season.
Huh?
Those were results from the entire season.
Well, yes, but still.
I'm just saying, if they end up missing the playoffs, it is their own fault because of the way they have played this season.
That's fair.
And that is a deserving result.
Well, I guess you can spin it that way, but
I'm spinning that football. It's a spiral.
Good phrase. didn't make it. I understand what you're saying, and I agree with the first statement more than this. I mean, the second statement more than the first one. Here's some other interesting things about this game, and this is from the same Dolphins Wire website. So the Dolphins have some key players on the IR. Bradley Chubb is out. And maybe more important, cornerback Xavien Howard is out. I think that's going to be more of the bigger a bigger issue for them. Diggs hasn't apparently eclipsed 100 receiving yards in any of his previous 10 games, and that's from the website, which is interesting.
Yep, he lost me the fantasy.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Here's another one. So they're saying that Tua Tagovailoa has to have the absolute biggest game of his career. So this is from I don't know who Joe Shad is, but they have a tweet from this guy on the article. And it's Tua Tagovailoa versus Buffalo. Here's his record.
More
than five record, five touchdowns, five interceptions, 79.6 rating. Here's Josh Allen's stats versus Miami. 9-2, 31 touchdowns, five interceptions, 110.8 rating. Josh Allen loves playing Miami. Tua does not like playing Buffalo. So there's that storyline going into this. Now, I think – hang on. Let's find this real quick because I'd like to know how Tua played against – oh, no, that's right. Buffalo blew them out this year. Yep. That was that 48-20 game.
Yep.
When Josh Allen threw four touchdowns and he had four incompletions. That's right. That's interesting. I didn't know that Tua's record against Buffalo and stats were that poor.
Are you waiting for me to say something?
Yeah, I was. I didn't set that up well for you.
No, I mean, I think Buffalo matches up really well against Miami. Again, like Miami is limping, bloodily limping into this matchup, and Buffalo couldn't be higher. But if Buffalo were to go out, this would be like the most poetic finish for Buffalo's season. If they were to somehow lose this game and then miss the playoffs.
Yeah.
And you talk about what they fired both their coordinators this year.
I think Doug McDermott took over the play calling. I don't know if they
fired. Oh, you're right.
Yeah,
you're totally right. So I mean, it's just so much turmoil in this for this team this year. But again, if they make the playoffs, I think they are like that second best team in the AFC.
Right. No, I agree. All right, so the last thing that I want to get to really before we end the show is going to be probably the game that I think everybody's going to be watching on more so than any of the NFL games this weekend, and that's going to be the college football playoffs, the championship between Washington and Michigan. I know for a fact who you're rooting for, but with that being said, you and I didn't get a chance to talk about the two semifinal games, which were two of the most exciting college football games I've ever watched. That Michigan and Alabama game was unbelievable. I mean, between the setting, the two programs, the two coaches, it was much watched TV, which, by the way, I heard another stat today, the 50 most watched television events of 2023 were all football games.
That is not surprising.
They were all NFL football games. The top 56 were actually football games, and 57 was a college football game, which is just hilarious. But going into this game, I mean, I know you watched the games. I did too. Who's favorite in this matchup? You like in Washington, or are you leaning more towards Michigan?
I like Michigan. I think if Michigan can control – I think Michigan has the potential – to dominate both sides of the line of scrimmage. So their defensive line against Washington's O-line and then vice versa there. And I think that's really the key. If they can somehow get pressure on Michael Penix, I think that's been the big area of attack to stop that Washington passing attack is somehow getting him down. He's one of the least sacked quarterbacks in Power 5. college football this year. And if Michigan's able to replicate what they did to Alabama in that first half, where they had the five sacks before half and just completely disraveled Milroe and that Alabama offense, if they're able to do that against Washington, I think Washington's defense isn't as good as the Nick Saban-led defense of Alabama. So Michigan should be able to get a maybe two-score lead before half if they're able to get some pressure and stop Washington. But that's easier said than done because you know what Washington's going to do. They're going to pass the ball. They're going to use Michael Penix Jr. and that, I mean, elite, best in the country wide receiver core and just slinging around the yard. And even if you know that that's happening, because Oregon knew both times, Texas knew what Washington was going to do, you still can't stop it because they have such great athletes on the outside. And Michael Penix Jr. is playing. He might be the best quarterback in college football.
He might be. It's funny you mentioned the wide receivers, because I was looking at the stats for the last game, and Washington had 6 players with more than 3 receptions and 4 players with more than 5. 2 players with more than 120 receiving yards.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's a you know, an A and B effort with Michael Penix and his wide receiver. So that's both of those players, you know, who are affecting that play working together. But again, you were talking about, so I haven't watched either of these teams really all year. Like I haven't seen much of either of these teams. So the two championship games were really what I got to see from both of these teams. And at least and you can tell me if my perception of them is of these teams are wrong, because I know you watched Washington obviously quite a bit, because you know you're an Oregon fan. So like, to me, when I was watching these two teams, it felt like Michigan coming into this game, coming into the championship game compared to Washington, Michigan's like the bully, right? Like they're the big bad physical team who just wants to punch you in the face. And Washington feels more like that. Washington kind of feels like Miami a little bit.
A little more finesse.
And Michigan kind of feels like the 49ers a little bit.
I think that's an accurate perception of both teams, but that I'll also say that was the MO in the Oregon Washington Pac-12 championship game.
Oh yeah.
People thought that Oregon was that. I mean, that's why Oregon was favored in that game, even though they lost, even though Washington was undefeated, playing in a neutral site. That's why Oregon was favored in that game by, I think it was like, what, close to 10 points?
I remember us talking about that when I remember you mentioning that felt really weird.
Yeah, I mean, I roll my eyes at that, but, and it's happening again and again. It's just like the media and Vegas is giving Washington this bulletin board material to give them motivation. But Washington, in at least in that Oregon game, really stepped up as a front seven. I mean, they took it to Oregon in the early part of that game, got a sizable lead, and then Oregon couldn't come back. And I mean, the big thing in that game was the Washington's rushing attack. They probably averaged over 5 yards a carry in that game. And now I think Michigan has a better D-line, better O-line than what Oregon gives you, but they're going to have to prove it in that game if we're going to be able to count on that being the difference maker.
Have you taken a look at the line for this game yet?
Isn't it 4.5?
Yeah, I was going to say, if you had a guess, what do you think it is? Yeah, Michigan is a 4.5-point favorite heading into this game.
Which, I mean, I think it's right that Michigan should be favored. They were ranked as the number one team in the country. But to be over a field goal, I think you're just selling what Washington is doing, selling it short.
Yeah, that feels a tiny bit disrespectful to them, I guess, a little bit.
And I think Washington was more impressive out of the two teams that played.
Well, they certainly didn't have as many mistakes.
And I mean, their offense just flows, looked so much better than what Michigan had. I think Michigan really needs to open up that passing attack. I get they want to rely on that on the run so much and kind of shorten the game, shorten the amount of possessions that teams have. But Washington scores so efficiently. I mean, they can take 4 plays and they're going to get 75 yards and a touchdown.
Mm-hmm. So How good realistically is Washington's defense? Like, are they anything really to write home about? Because it didn't seem like it that much in the Texas game.
I mean, they had key stops, right? Like, they got up by two scores on Texas. Wasn't it 21-35 or something like that at one point? And then Texas kind of...
I'm looking at the sort of breakdown, the scoring summary. It was seven... No, it was... The biggest it got was, where is it? Where? Okay, no, you are right. I was looking at a little different spot. It was 34-21 at one point, fourth quarter with 14:51 left.
Right, like each team was going back and forth, and then Washington was able to put a couple stops together. I mean, that Washington defense stepped up against Oregon, stepped up against Texas. I think there will be more opportunity for Michigan in this game compared to playing a Nick Saban Alabama team. I think that's just – it's just natural. But if you slight that Washington defensive unit, I think you're going to be sorely mistaken.
Right. I'm super excited. I mean, what a great weekend of football, right? Like, you have – on both nights, you have two absolutely monster games. You have – in the NFL, you have the Bills and the Dolphins fighting for – I guess for Buffalo, a potential just regular playoff spot or the second seed in the AFC, which is just crazy.
Yep.
And then Miami as well, fighting for the second seed. And then the following night, you have the college football playoff, you know, championship, which will be the final iteration of this four-team format, because next year we're moving to that 12-team format, which is going to be really, really interesting to see, because now we basically just have the NFL playoffs in college. So I'm super excited for this weekend of,
I'm scared, man.
You are scared.
As a Oregon fan, I do not want the last year of the Pac-12, because Washington's following Oregon into the Big Ten. I don't want Washington and their fans to have a national championship over Oregon. Another one.
Satisfaction.
The only thing that's saving Oregon right now is that I think Washington won a national championship in like the 70s. And yeah. Oregon, granted, has zero, but it's like,
I was gonna had any.
Huh?
I was gonna ask you if Oregon ever had any.
They do not. And that is, I mean, that's reminded to Oregon fans every single big game.
Oh, I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is, as it should be. I mean, if you're a rival of the team, it feels like an easy place to start.
Yeah, I mean, it's an easy, just, hey, shut up, kid. You haven't won anything,
right?
Exactly. 91.
Mm.
1991.
Gotcha. Man, it's just a great weekend of sports, at least if you're a football fan. NBA is still going strong. I know we didn't do much talking about the NBA, or actually any talk about
the NBA. Can I say one thing about the NBA?
Yeah.
So this is big time trade season, right?
Yes.
And the Kings have been linked. They were linked to Pascal Siakam for about, I think, 3 hours yesterday. It came out that they were like the heaviest suitor of Pascal. And then right before tip off, ironically against the Raptors, it came out that they're no longer chasing. So I don't know if Monty like invited what's Toronto's GM, Asad Najiri or something like that, what's his name,
that sounds right,
Asai,
keep going. I'll
but that was weird, because I was like, I got excited, I was gonna send something to you about like, oh yeah, like I like Pascal, I think he'd be a good fit, just gives you a little bit more length, a little bit more versatility for the Kings. But now it's, oh, the Kings and Lakers are, or the Kings and Warriors are heavily linked to Zach LaVine. I'm like, no. Please, no. Please, no Zach LaVine. He can't play. He doesn't want to play defense. He can't play defense. Don't let him come here. So on my run today, I was listening to a podcast, and they were talking.
I got
to
ask.
What's up?
How long was the run?
Dude, I ran all the way to my dad's house and back. The way I took to his house was 4 miles, and then the way back was about 3 miles.
So you ran 7 miles?
Oh, I walked a lot, dude. Don't even worry about me.
Okay, I was going to say, I ran 5 miles the other day for the first time, and I was like, man, that was a lot.
Yeah, it sucks. But while I was listening to that, it was the Bill Simmons podcast with Howard Beck on, the NBA insider, and they were discussing Mikal Bridges potentially being available for the Nets. And I think he would be an astounding fit for Sacramento.
Oh yeah. I was going to say, if I could hand pick somebody right now, realistically, if he's actually available, you can take Harrison Barnes, you can take Kevin Herter, you can take Keon Ellis or Davion Mitchell. At that point, get Bridges here immediately.
So what I was looking at, I went on ESPN Trade Machine to try to get the contract set up. So if you have Mikal Bridges making $21 million, he's on a 3-year deal, he's not a rental. So I think it's gonna make him cost a little more. But theoretically, I mean, the Nets aren't doing anything this year,
right?
Right. So Barnes at 17, I think Davion's got to be in that deal. Whatever value Davion has is going to be kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Because he was out of the rotation for a lot of this year, but I think teams like him. I was thinking about, like, if you have Harrison, Davion, second round picks, first round picks, like, who says no to that deal first, the Nets or the Kings?
Probably the Nets.
I agree.
I think you'd want Kevin Herter.
I don't know what value Kevin Herter. I mean, he's no longer starting anymore. He's not hitting shots. So I was thinking, what would the Kings have to take? And I think they have to take a Simmons contract.
Yeah, which I would be more than willing to do, I think.
And he's making – I mean, I think you just sit him at the end of the bench. Don't even try to flirt with playing him. But $37 million this year. He has another year of his deal. I think you got to throw in Kevin Herter to make that money match. And I was even thinking, like, who else do the Kings have a value? I think Sasha might have a little value because he's unproven. So you throw him in there, and then the money kind of works.
Make it happen, Monty. Get Mikal Bridges here immediately. Put him on a flight, and when the pilot lands, fire him.
I don't think the Kings have a lot else going for him to try to make that deal. They don't have very attractive picks. They don't have, like, a crazy good young player. They just kind of got to hope that the Nets are trying to offload and rebuild.
I agree. But I don't know. When's the deadline?
Good question.
I don't know when the deadline is off the top of my head. February 8th.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
February 8th.
But if you could get Mikal Bridges on this team, would you give up Keegan Murray?
No.
I don't think I would either.
Not at all. What he could become and what he's kind of becoming, I don't think there's any way. I also see an article here from NBC Sports that says that the Nets are most likely planning to keep Bridges. Now, that was 2 days ago, though. So, I mean, a lot could change. But
yeah. I mean, even if, like, the Kings were to go out, Ben Simmons, in theory, would be kind of good for the Kings. But he's just not the defensive player he once was.
He's not really the anything he once was.
He's still a cancer for the locker room.
Yeah, Is he even playing at all?
I don't know.
I'm going to look up the Nets' most recent game. He didn't play last game.
He's set to make $40 million next year.
Oh, God.
Bless you.
Sorry, I've been sniffling. I've had this cat in my lap forever, and it's starting to get to me.
He's only played 6 games this season.
That's bad.
He's shooting. He's 1 of 4 from the free throw line.
Oh, that's bad. Immediately. I don't care how you do it, honestly. There are a few untouchable players. I think De'Aaron, Sabonis, and Keegan are untouchable, but I think at that point
I wouldn't want to part ways with Malik Monk.
I guess that's fair too. He probably is untouchable as well.
Now, if he's like the deciding factor in that trade, that would be tough.
Yeah, that would be really hard. I don't think you can get rid of Malik. I really don't. Trey Lyles has been given some really good minutes too.
Yeah. Yeah, he has. And the other kind of guy, like a Moses Moody, which I don't think would ever happen because I don't think the Warriors and Kings would make a deal together. But if the Kings got Moses Moody, I think that'd be pretty good. I don't think he'd cost a lot.
Right.
I think that'd be awesome. Also, you could just go down the line of players on Toronto. I think a Gary Trent Jr. that's not even playing would be awesome.
Yep.
For the Kings. Yeah.
I mean, really all we're asking for is, you know, a younger, sort of faster defensive forward, you know?
We're not asking for a lot.
Yeah, it's not huge. They don't have to average 20 points a game.
Wiggins to the Kings?
That would work. That would work.
Oh, my God. So it's a three-team deal. Mikal Bridges, Nick Claxton, and Royce O'Neal going to the Warriors. The Kings get Andrew Wiggins. I mean, Andrew Wiggins sucks this year. But the Nets would get Chris Paul, Kevin Huerter, Gary Payton, Kevon Looney, Chris Duarte, and Moses Moody. So you're just talking about the Kings giving up Duarte and Huerter for Andrew Wiggins.
That would work.
In theory, it wouldn't be that bad, but Wiggins has been so awful this year.
Yeah, but change of scenery, and he wouldn't have to be a primary option either. I mean, he'd be the fourth option.
You really think so?
Yeah. I mean, Fox and Sabonis are still 1-2, and I think Keegan is at times 1 and at times 2, but also at times 3.
So he's averaging 12 points a game. He's a career, like, 19 points per game.
I think Kuminga is also taking some of those minutes, though, too, right?
Yeah, Kuminga's playing better this year. I think that's just what it is. Like, Kuminga's playing a lot better than what Wiggins is. I think the Warriors are going to be not as active as people anticipate.
Yeah, probably not. Probably not. Well, it certainly is going to be interesting to see if the Kings do anything, because historically they just are not very active. I mean, the Sabonis thing was the biggest thing that they've done in a long, long time.
And look at the flack that they caught for that one.
I know, and then look how well it's turned out for each team involved. That Halliburton-Sabonis trade is really going to go down. It's just an absolutely awesome deal for both sides, which does not often.
I think the Kings are the team that looks back on that trade with the most regret, because I mean, we had Halliburton for nothing here.
Yes, but do we really think that Hallie and Fox were going to both become what they became if they were together?
I don't think so. Right. I don't think Fox would be the player that he is now, and I still to this day think that Fox is better than Halliburton. But it is wild that Halliburton was here. And I don't think Indiana is sitting there like, yeah, we gave up Sabonis. It's like they were trying to get rid of him anyway. And they ended up getting maybe a top 10 player in the NBA.
Right. Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Well, we got a lot of stuff that could potentially happen over the next couple weeks. And we're certainly going to be excited to talk about it. Coming into next week's show, having the college football playoffs be over and the NFL season, regular season being over, it's going to be a big show next week. There's going to be a lot of things to talk about. And obviously the NBA is ever present as well. So sports, I mean, it's a good time to be a sports fan. It really is. So thank you all so much for listening. We really do appreciate it. Happy New Year to everybody listening. Thank you for continuing your first week of the new year with us. We really do appreciate it. Have a wonderful weekend and enjoy the football. Really, I mean, there's so much this weekend, so just enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean it's an awesome weekend for sports.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So we will see you all next week, and that means very shortly.
Later. See ya.